Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Sarah Chaffee. Today we'll be listening to part 3 of a lecture Casey Luskin gave on the taxonomy of information. He explains how intelligent design employs the scientific method, uses principles of uniformitarianism, and enables scientific advances.
So let's close this up by addressing a common misconception about ID. Is the design inference that we've just made through this process, is this simply a God of the gaps argument? I would argue that it is not. ID is not based upon gaps in our knowledge, ignorance, or what we don't know. Rather, ID is based upon what we do know about where information comes from. ID is based upon finding in nature the kind of information and complexity which in our experience comes only from intelligence. So this is not just a negative argument against Darwinian evolution or other forms of evolution. This is a positive argument, again, based upon finding in nature the kind of information and complexity which in our experience comes only from intelligence. So how can we see that ID is a positive scientific argument? Well, we can see that by seeing how ID uses the scientific method to make its claims. The scientific method is often described as a four-step process of observation, hypothesis, experiment, and conclusion. And ID uses this method. So ID begins with the observation that intelligent agents produce high levels of complex and specified information. This goes back to the principle of uniformitarianism that was developed by Charles Lyell. In his book, Principles of Geology, he famously said that it was an attempt to explain the former changes of the Earth's surface by reference to causes now in operation. So the idea is, you look at causes that are at work in the world around us, we understand what those causes can do, what are the known effects of those causes, or what are some of the cause and effect relationships that we see in the world around us, and then we use those causes to explain the historical record. So when we find the known effects of a cause we can observe in the world around us, when we find those effects in the historical record, then we're justified potentially in invoking that cause. So that's why the famous sort of motto of Charles Lyell's idea was the present is the key to the past. By observing the way the world works today, we can make inferences about what happened in the past by finding the effects of known causes in the present day. The present is the key to the past. So I like this quote from Henry Quaisler because this really captures sort of the essence of the uniformitarian argument for design. He said, "The creation of new information is habitually associated with conscious activity." Henry Quaisler was an information theorist in the 1960s. And I think that he really came upon an important insight here. He knows that in all of our experience, information is always, or at least, you know, new types of complex and specified information. That's how ID proponents would refine this. But new information comes from intelligence. This is the first step when you're doing a uniformitarian scientific argument. You look at the world around you and you ask, how does it work? And what we see is that in our experience, new information, or at least certain types of information, always comes from intelligence. Again, Stephen Meyer refines this, I think, in a little bit better way because he defines that type of information which in our experience comes from intelligence as specified complexity. Again, we saw this quote earlier, but this is a nice summary of the positive case for design and how it makes a sort of a uniformitarian argument. He says, "We have repeated experience of rational and conscious agents, in particular ourselves, generating or causing increases in complex and specified information, both in the form of sequence-specific lines of code and in the form of hierarchically arranged systems of parts. Our experience-based knowledge of information flow confirms that systems with large amounts of specified complexity, especially codes and languages, invariably originate from a mind, from an intelligent source, from a mind or a personal agent." So this is the essence of this positive scientific method, uniformitarian-based argument for design. In our experience, we know that complex and specified information always comes, when it increases, it always comes from an intelligent agent. And so when we find complex and specified information in nature, we are justified based upon the principle that the present is the key to the past. We're justified in inferring design when we find high CSI systems in nature. So again, the key point for right now is that ID is not based upon what we don't know, but rather it's based upon what we do know about the kinds of causes that generate CSI-rich systems. In our experience, intelligence is the cause of these high CSI systems. This is a positive argument, not a God of the gaps argument. It's a positive argument for design. So getting back to the scientific method, we saw the observation is that intelligent agents generate high CSI systems. Now we make a hypothesis. Design theorists hypothesize that if a natural object, such as X here, was designed, it will contain high CSI. And ID theorists then perform experimental tests upon natural objects to determine if they contain high CSI. And there's a number of different kinds of experiments that have been done by ID theorists to detect high CSI in natural systems. They include genetic knockout experiments, mutational sensitivity tests, and theoretical computer simulations. To give you an example of one of these, Douglas Axe, who's an ID theorist, he has published research in the Journal of Molecular Biology where he took he took proteins that were about 150 amino acids long, and he mutated them. So he asked, okay, how many of the different amino acid sequences that are 150 amino acids long can yield a stable functional protein fold that's a necessary prerequisite for getting a functional enzyme? And what he found is basically the chance of a random sequence of 150 amino acids yielding a functional protein fold through random mutation would be 10 to the negative 74th. So only one in 10 to the 74th sequences of 150 amino acids length will yield a stable functional protein fold. So many amino acids have to be just right to yield a functional protein fold. So if you look at this graph on the upper right, as you're sort of going along through sequence space, you're going to find that the vast majority of sequences yield virtually no enzyme activity. They don't yield a functional protein. But then you get to one particular sequence, and you see that the function of that protein spikes. So functional protein sequences are very rare as you go through sequence space, the possibilities of all different amino acid sequences for a given length. And again, Dr. Axe published this in Journal of Molecular Biology, and if you do the math on this, essentially what this shows is that a protein of this length has about 245 bits of information in it. This is high CSI. This is high CSI. And this is more CSI than could be generated through natural causes. So because X exhibits high levels of CSI, a quality known to be produced only by intelligent design, we conclude that X was designed. So when we see functional protein folds, those might be a great example of high CSI systems that show through the scientific method that they were designed. So again, how does ID use the scientific method? Again, we observe that intelligence is the cause of high CSI. We make a hypothesis or a prediction that life will contain high levels of complex and specified information. And then we do experiments that uncover astronomical CSI in biological systems. And the conclusion is that many high CSI aspects of life were designed. And of course, like any scientific theory, we hold our conclusions tentatively subject to the discovery of new scientific data in the future. We always want to hold our conclusions in science tentatively subject to future discoveries. So this is not the end. Just because we've inferred design, that does not mean that's the end of doing science under a design-based paradigm. There's actually a number of different avenues of research that ID opens up. So I'd like to talk briefly about some of the scientific utility of intelligent design and how intelligent design can help us make scientific advances in various fields. For example, in biochemistry, ID explains and predicts the presence of complex and specified information in proteins and DNA. In cell biology, ID explains why the cell resembles design structures rather than accidental byproducts of neo-Darwinian evolution. And this can allow scientists to make predictions about what we should find in the cell and better understand the workings of molecular machines. In genetics, ID predicts and explains that we will find function for quote-unquote junk DNA, while the evidence shows that neo-Darwinism has stifled research into non-coding DNA, or what they thought was junk DNA. In systematics, ID explains why there are similarities between living species and also why there are so many discrepancies between conflicting evolutionary trees, basically why we find similarities in places where they're not predicted by common ascent. In animal biology, ID predicts function for allegedly vestigial organs or systems, whereas evolution has made many faulty predictions of non-function. In information theory, ID encourages scientists to understand where intelligent causes are superior to natural causes in producing certain types of information. And this can help us solve problems that maybe normally we use genetic algorithms to solve. This can help us to better solve some of those problems. In paleontology, ID's prediction of irreducible complexity can help explain why we see paleontological patterns like abrupt appearance, punctuated change, and stasis throughout the history of life. And in physics and cosmology, ID encourages scientists to investigate and discover more instances of fine-tuning of the laws of physics and properties of our universe that uniquely allow for the existence of advanced forms of life. So this is not God of the gaps. We're making a positive case for design as an inference to the best explanation for the origin of new CSI-rich features. And we have positive experience-based knowledge of a cause that generates new specified information and integrated circuitry, namely intelligence. So this is not God of the gaps. We're finding in nature the kind of information and complexity which in our experience comes from intelligence. So just a quick comment on the God of the gaps accusation against intelligent design. I would say that many folks who make this accusation are actually engaging in materialism of the gaps, where they assume that all gaps in our knowledge will be filled by material causes. So they can only make this gaps objection if they're privileging material causes to be superior to intelligent causes in all circumstances. So basically, many who make the gaps charge, they want material causes to have a privilege that precludes making a design inference in all circumstances. And so I would say this is not appropriate, because given what we know about how we can detect intelligent causation, why should material causes enjoy such an absolute privilege? Unless we are to privilege material causes on principle and deny our ability to ever infer intelligent causes, which would be inappropriate because there are many cases where we know we should infer intelligent causes, then the gaps objection fails. But since we know what intelligent causes can do, we can reliably detect the prior action of intelligent agents. We know what intelligent agents produce. We can find their prior action in the world around us, and we can detect design. We cannot say that it's wrong in all cases to detect design. So long as we hold the conclusion of a design tentatively, the gaps objection holds no traction. So the very basic essence of the logic here is that an ID theorist finds that a mind is the cause of certain kinds of information. She goes out into the natural world and finds that that same kind of information is found in natural objects, and so she infers that a mind was involved in generating the information she sees in the natural world. So ID's motto is follow the evidence where it leads. But I would say that for Darwinian evolution and many materialists, their motto is follow the evidence so long as it leads to natural causes. That's very different from follow the evidence where it leads. Follow the evidence where it leads is the best way to seek truth of all kinds. If you want to seek truth with blinders on and you're not really interested in finding the truth, then put sort of restrictions that say that we can only follow the evidence so long as it leads to natural causes. So I would say that ID is a superior form of seeking truth to the sort of methodological naturalism that many evolutionary scientists adopt. So what we're not saying, just one last time in case you didn't get it, we're not saying that because natural selection cannot produce high CSI, therefore intelligent design. That would be a gaps-based argument. That would be a God of the gaps argument. Here's what we're saying. Natural selection cannot produce high CSI or other known material causes, but intelligent design can produce high CSI, therefore intelligent design. So we've detected in nature the kind of information which in our experience derives always from an intelligent cause. ID is not based upon what we don't know, but rather is based upon what we do know about the causes that generate CSI-rich systems. So thank you very much.
Once again, that was Casey Luskin, talking about the taxonomy of information. For ID the Future, I'm Sarah Chaffee. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.